Brian Kaplowitz, and you're listening to the Speaker Match Radio Series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. This is a live show where we interview top experts in the speaking industry and business to provide emerging speakers with marketing strategies and other business-building advice. If you're listening live, you can participate in this call online right now by going to speakermatch.com/radio. Hello, everybody. This is Brian Kaplowitz, your host, and today's speaker is a 25-year veteran in the speaking business. He started from nowhere in the early 1980s. He struggled, sweated to get a foothold, and then went broke twice. Then he developed a system, a speaking business success system, that got him up to a six-figure income. After that, he made himself a mentor for aspiring speakers, and today he shows aspiring speakers his proven system for marketing and presenting. You may have heard of Bert Dubin before on some of our audio CDs. You may have seen articles that we've posted in our online newsletters and other places. But Bert has been a regular here at Speaker Match for some time now, and I'm very happy to have you back with us. Welcome, Bert.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Well, today we're going to be talking about something that you haven't ever talked about here before, and I think that it's a really great it's a great topic for people, especially in today's economy. You're going to be talking about little known markets for speakers and some of the actions and strategies you engage in to build your business even in challenging economies. I love the idea for this. Tell us a little bit more about where do people get started with this? How do you find some cash-rich markets? What are they?
I'll be happy to tell you. I discovered this particular market that most speakers evidently do not know about. I have been reading the literature of the speaking business for the past 25 or 30 years, and I do not recall ever seeing an article, there may have been one somewhere, on this market. It's largely unrecognized, and it is for people who speak, consult, and train. It is a market that is hungry for virtually all bread-and-butter topics, such as communication with vendors, with staff, with superiors, stress management, customer service, persuasion, managing people, working with difficult people, executive decision-making, negotiation, and so much more. Now, this is a market which is absolutely reliable. They budget mega dollars every fiscal year for education and for consulting. It's a market with not just a gargantuan budget, but they have to spend it each year on penalty of it being taken out of their budget the following year. Now, this market is the federal government of the country in which you live. Most speakers do not know how to crack the code. I do. I have served this market. I presented programs for the USA Internal Revenue Service from coast to coast. At least one of these was recorded with my permission for their continued internal use. I presented programs for the U.S. Navy in Pearl Harbor. And let me just tell you what are the ways to get into the market and how to serve this market. To begin with, United States government agencies, and by the way, for listeners in other countries, the principles apply. Details may be a bit different. However, the principles are appropriate for any federal government. They like to do business with organizations, not with individuals. So create a DBA. That stands for Doing Business As. Your DBA is your alter ego. There are no tax reporting changes. It's a good idea to let your DBA imply a benefit and a promise relative to the service you will offer to the federal government. For example, my speaking success system, that's a DBA, and it implies the benefit, the presence, I should say, of a benefit and a promise for those who wish to speak. Do the same thing. And you can do this when you're working out of your garage. For example, Thomas Watson, years and years and years ago, one man working out of his home garage coined the name International Business Machines. That company is now known as IBM. Now, some details about the government entities. They do not pay you one cent.
Before you go on to that, what's the advantage to having a DBA?
The advantage is it makes you sound bigger than you are. Think of Tom Watson, a young man who dreamed up this concept of using punch cards, that's what it was way back in those days before we were born, to keep records and facilitate automating business record keeping. So by calling himself International Business Machines, he was just one guy working out of his garage at home. It made him sound like a big deal. That's the advantage of using a DBA.
Okay, and do you recommend not having your own name in that DBA?
That's a matter of individual opinion, personal taste. Some people like to use their name in their DBA. For example, Howard Hughes, when he created his company, it was Hughes Aircraft. Though when he created his airline, it became Transcontinental and Western Airlines. That was his original name. Later, he changed it to Transworld Airlines. So it's a matter of taste, whether or not your name is in it. Many people like to keep their name out. Many people like to include their name.
Okay.
Okay, now you should know this. I'm saying this for the listeners. These government entities, at least in my experience, and by the way, before I finish that sentence, everything I share with you is empirical information, my own research. It could be wrong in your case at a particular time, but in my case, they like to do business, as I said, with companies, and that can be simply a DBA. The next point, they do not and certainly did not pay me one cent in front, nor did they pay any of my expenses. My program had to be delivered wherever it was, and then I send an invoice, and they must pay within 30 days. The General Services Administration insists upon that. They will certainly write you letters of commendation on their letterhead. I got a great letter from the USA Internal Revenue Service, and they did refer me. They referred me to other IRS offices in other parts of the country where I did more. Now, let me tell you how to get started accessing the USA federal government. And it's probably the same for other countries. Contact in the USA the General Services Administration. Tell them you can find that number in Washington, D.C. Tell them your company name. Remember, you've got to create that name. And what you offer, and say you want to be approved as a GSA vendor and that you offer solutions to real challenges. Tell them you want to have your name placed on the RFP. RFP stands for Request for Proposal. That gets you in the gate with GSA.
Albert, is there a place that you can go to make sure that you're registered as a provider to the government? Is there one central place?
The General Services Administration.
That takes care of all of the different government offices?
Not necessarily, but it's a start. When you call other government agencies, and I will be talking about that in a few moments, Brian, when calling other government agencies, the fact that you are approved as a GSA vendor gives you legitimacy with all the other government agencies.
Okay.
Now, the next thing to do once you've been approved as a GSA vendor is contact the various federal departments. For example, the Department of Commerce. Do everything I just said to do with them. Tell them you want to be a vendor for their internal needs. And they all have thousands of people working for them. Now, in fact, contact every cabinet department, that is the president's cabinet. Each is its own bureaucracy. Each has its own huge budget and its own unique requirements. Then contact each branch of the armed services, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Coast Guard. Same thing again. Tell them you are approved as a GSA vendor. You have information of value you can convey, and you want to get on their RFP list. Now, for listeners overseas, translate my findings to your country and to the equivalent department or agencies. It's important to remember, and boy, have I found this out, that all governments are bureaucracies, and they've got backbiting, jealousies, turf defense, infighting indigenous to virtually all large organizations. Look at what is going on in Washington, D.C. now, between the Republicans and the Democrats. So this is the way the world is, and with this world as it is, we certainly can do business with the federal government, with its various agencies, and with the armed services. Now, that's my complete information on that service.
Okay. Now, is there still money to be found in a lot of different government agencies, or are there certain areas that are going to be easier to penetrate?
It depends on the reputation and the talent of the speaker. Obviously, if you are going to market your services, you have to have services to market. You have to have unique understandings of value to organizations that employ a lot of people. There's not much more to it than that, and you have to believe in yourself, Brian. Anyone that doesn't believe they can make a difference surely will not.
So are there certain topics?
Yeah, yes, indeed. Let me give you, I just read a list. I'll go right back to the same list. Communication is very important. Communication on many levels with their vendors. They all have vendors, with their staff, with their superiors. Then there's stress management. Heaven knows there's a lot of stress in government. Customer service. That was the training I did for the IRS. Customer service, believe it or not. We who pay taxes are customers of the Internal Revenue Service. Persuasion. Persuasion skills are always valuable. Management skills. Working with difficult people. I did a program for the Navy in Pearl Harbor, and it was called Working with Impossible People. I suppose that was the name of the program they wanted, and I created a program for them. Then we have decision-making, negotiation, and it goes on and on. Anything that a large group of people can need help in doing better is something that can be offered to the federal government, and for that matter, state governments, county governments, city governments.
Are there certain places that speakers should go, or what should they do to get started in breaking into this market?
I've exhausted my information on this, Brian. I'm ready to move on to the next topic.
Okay. Let's go to the next topic. What do you have?
All right. It is how to make the most of today's economic turbulence to build your business. And by that, I mean your speaking, training, consulting business. To begin with, stay resolutely self-employed. When you must allow yourself to work for a contractor, go in as an independent contractor. Do not allow yourself to be an employee, because that's death to your moving ahead and building your own business. It is important to remember, especially these days, that lesser mortals are either retreating out of the speaking consulting business, or they're doing nothing, waiting for the storm to pass. Most competition does indeed evaporate, and that leaves the field to the bold and tough. That means you. Instead, market outcomes. Outcomes are what decision makers are eager to buy and pay top dollar for. They won't invest in a speech. They will indeed invest in outcomes. You must be resolute. You must have bulldog blood. In my garden, within sight of where I sit right now, because my office is in my home, I've got a marvelous bulldog, not a living bulldog, but a stone statue of a bulldog, because I learned the hard way after going broke a couple of times in this business in the early 1980s, a long time ago, that I had to be a bulldog. I had to have bulldog blood and absolutely not give up. Now, since other people are retreating out of the business, this is the opportunity, the beautiful golden opportunity for people listening to this call to engage tough times, not to give up, and to persist in doing intelligent outbound marketing. Now, one of the things that some people have not done that you can do is target new markets in which you are a new face offering new hope. This is what decision makers yearn for, hope. If you, for example, have been serving the corporate market as an instance, why not start to serve or serve more of the association market? Find markets that you have not served and you then become that new face. I told myself, I remember more years ago than I want to admit, when I was in sales, and every one of a 150-person sales group I was part of was crying the blues. I was not. I was doing better than ever. And I told myself, I carry my business climate around with me. Think of your business climate as an invisible eggshell or aura. Think of it as a safe haven out of which you function to serve your universe. As for all the people in your life in these times, remember the words of the late, great Joseph J. Charbonneau, my mentor years ago. He said these words, "People are either the wind in your sails or an anchor on your tail." So if you have employees, vendors, partners who are not aligned with your spirits and your goals, dump them. As for watching your money, whenever you invest in your business, ask yourself, will this investment advance me toward my goals? You either get a yes or a no, and if it will not advance you, don't do it. Simply don't do it.
Now, a lot of times it's really hard to know. There's a lot of advice out there about how to spend your money. There are many people asking for your money. It's hard to know in advance what is going to be a worthwhile investment.
I have learned that way over half of the people in the speaking business that offer help to speakers are scoundrels. They read a couple of books, and they proclaim themselves experts. I learned my stuff the hard way, on the street, in the school of hard knocks. There's nothing like going broke, going down to the gutter, and then moving yourself up to the top of the hill again. It's marvelous. I teach from experience. In fact, I'm the only one, for the past 20 years, Brian, that offers a money-back guarantee of success in the speaking business to people who choose to allow themselves to be mentored by me. I only have one condition, just one, the only one I've ever had. Simply abide by my guidance and document it to me that you have done so. You will be successful or I will give you back your money. And the last time I did indeed have to give back was 1995, 15 years ago.
Wow. And I may be opening up a can of worms here, but we're going to try something. And one of the things that makes our teleseminars different from a podcast or a radio show is the ability for people to participate in the call. And we have this fancy new system here that I really enjoyed using, myconferenceline.com. And if the guest on the phone have a question for you, they can dial *6 on their telephone keypad. That will let me know that they have a question and they'd like to be brought into the call. So won't be opening up the line so that we can hear everybody and make it difficult to answer questions. But I would like to take a few if anybody does have any questions for especially on this topic of places to spend your money wisely. I think that's something that a lot of people have questions about. It's one of the most common questions that we do get is, where do you spend money? So if you do have a question and you'd like to be brought in, just dial Paul's telling me it's not *6. I say that every time. *2 on your telephone keypad to raise your hand. *6 will mute you, and I think you have to do *6 to unmute you. *2 will raise your hand and let me know that you have a question. Thank you, Paul. Always watching out for me. We got a couple of people on here. I'm going to go ahead and bring in the first caller, Bert, and we'll see if you can help them out.
All right.
Okay, caller, go ahead. Somebody on from San Antonio, it looks like. Go ahead. You're on the line with us.
Okay. I was asked about the National Speakers Organization. Is that a worthwhile organization to join?
Yes. In 1983, that's a long time ago, 27 years ago, after I'd already gone broke twice, I received an invitation to join the National Speakers Association. And I refused. I didn't feel worthy, even though I was speaking nationally by then. I received two more invitations. And then finally, by the late part of 83, I did join NSA. It was the best move I ever made. I recommend joining NSA. There is, however, one problem. You have to qualify to join these days. In my case, all you had to do was write a check 27 years ago. Now, you have to get, I think, 25 paid bookings, something like that, before you can actually be accepted as a member of NSA. I could be off on the details of that. However, all you'd have to do is call NSA, and I'm going to give you their phone number. It is 480, this is in the USA, in Phoenix, 480-968-2552. That's 480-968-2552. Ask the receptionist to get the qualifications you may now have, the requisites, in order to be considered to join NSA. However, it gets better than that. In you live in San Antonio, I think I heard?
Yeah, that's right.
There may be a San Antonio chapter of NSA. There is a North Texas chapter and two or three other chapters in Texas. If not San Antonio, there may be one in Austin.
It's actually the NSA HOTS, Heart of Texas chapter, and it's San Antonio and Austin together.
Oh, great. Okay. Thanks, Brian. Yes, you can go to their meetings. I don't know that you can become a full member, but for money, they'll let you attend their meetings. And that is a start. That allows you to listen to some of the great speakers who come and speak for the chapters. I've spoken for many, many chapters around the USA and for all but one of the chapters in Canada. And for that matter, in Australia and in the United Kingdom, even New Zealand. And you're usually given a hearty welcome. They don't pay you any money, and they'll pay some expenses, though if it's a foreign thing, you better pay your own expenses if you want to speak overseas.
All right. I think I've
given you the idea. Yeah,
we'll move on past that question. I'll just let everybody know that we're a speaker master is a member of the NSA, and highly recommend it. We're at every annual convention, and you can find more information at nsaspeaker.com.
Okay. .org.
.org.
I think it's .org, yeah.
I think it may be either one, but check them out. The next call is from, it looks like it's a Skype caller, so they could be coming to us from any country. I don't know where they're from.
Well, that's probably me.
That's you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, good. The application process for becoming an approved GSA vendor, can you tell us a little more about what they require, how long it takes to get approved, what kind of information they request?
Well, when I did it, it was over 15 years ago, and my information, purely in my memory, may no longer be accurate. However, it was as simple as could be. I just had to tell the receptionist I wanted to become an approved GSA vendor and to say I wanted to be placed on the RFP list. They may have sent me a questionnaire. You know, I really don't remember that detail after all these years. However, whatever it was not complicated. It was simple, just a matter of asking and then following the protocols they provided.
Okay, we'll take one more caller from Oakland, California, then we'll move on to the next thing that you have on your list, Bert.
Yeah, how you doing? Is this, am I on?
You are on. What's your name?
How you doing? My name is Cy, calling out. Cy from Oakland area. Hi, nice to meet you, Mr. Dublin. What's your great information? There's two questions. What's your website?
My website, www.bertdubin, I'll spell that for you, BURTDUBIN.com.
Great.
Now, that takes you to my homepage where you can sign up for my complimentary newsletter, where you can also sign up for my blog, the Bert Dubin Bare Ass blog, and where you can also get a free 7-part course on success in the speaking business, all based on my experience. BertDubin.com.
Wonderful. I wrote that down. Second question, real quickly. You know, I believe that message matters when you're a speaker. And years ago, 5 years ago, I started writing a book on respect. My last book is called Seven Letters to Live By, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And ever since then, I've been on the front cover of Oakland Tribune, and I go back to Hawaii where I'm from, and I do some ABC stuff with them. But kind of break out of that West Coast thing, and I like that idea about the government information, very good information. It's just, like you said, I think it's the people that has a tenacity to do the extra things and the right things. You got like people like you with the knowledge. I was an idiot, and I sent my book to Barack Obama, of all people. And, you know, you can't do that, you know, but my relationship with him is that he was born in the same hospital I was in Hawaii. And
wow.
Talking about respect, there's a lack of respect in society. So a lot of communities here in Hawaii gravitate towards that because of the gang activity we're having, and even in corporate America where they treat you like a number, not a person anymore. So I just was wondering, how powerful is message? Does message matters when people look at the potential speakers?
It's everything. Your message has to indicate that you deliver outcomes they yearn for, long for, hunger for. That has to be in there somewhere. And then you must actually deliver.
Great. That was a good answer. Okay. I think that we were getting to some strategies that you had for speakers to follow during tough times.
Yes, and I'll continue with ideas for making tough times great times. I would suggest focusing energy on closing bookings now. Not necessarily, though maybe, by discounting your fees. I prefer to add value. For example, an extra program the same day at no extra cost. Or to chair a panel. Or to MC the event. Or to host a private round table for an elect group. If it's a sales group, it could be the top salespeople. If it's an executive group, senior executives. Piling on the extras makes all the difference. It's like putting things on the other side of the scale until the scale drops and they say, I'd be a fool not to hire this guy. What it comes out to is over-delivering. For example, here's how to over-deliver. Offer follow-up phone coaching for individuals that they can record, or if you wish, after the program, teleclasses they can record or even sell and keep the proceeds. How you market it, how you package it, is a matter of your own judgment. You don't want to give away the store in order to do business. You do want to pile on extras. Now, another point, especially for tough times, and this really worked for me in the tough times back in the late 1980s, relentlessly pursue mastery of your craft. Let your inner knowing guide you to weave the shreds and tatters of the economy into a tapestry of triumph for you. And you can do this. You absolutely can. One of the things that many people don't know is that marginal speakers, wannabe speakers, are getting out of the game. Let me give you some ideas, if I may, for penetrating the speaking market now. There is a regular market, as distinct from the government market, that is the surest market for experts who speak, and that is the association market, professional and trade associations. There's Columbia Books in Washington, D.C. I do not have their 800 number at hand, but you can Google Columbia Books, Washington, D.C. They publish a directory of associations, a printed directory and an online directory, which I just heard about, which is even more useful because with that you can sort. The association market is so good because even though they have fewer dollars to invest in speakers and are bargaining harder, when they announce a meeting, they have to hold that meeting. They have to hold that meeting. The trick, so to speak, is to offer benefits that they want. For example, if you generate or offer to generate better outcomes for the audience, and you can do this using the power of your subconscious mind, they will want that. Now, I happen to have a report that I created called How to Be a Genius on a Platform. It's complimentary. I'll be happy to send it to anyone that asks for it. It's a PDF. All I need is your email address requesting my PDF report called How to Be a Genius on the Platform. I will send it to you with my compliments.
And they can get that at bertdubin.com?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, at bertdubin.com. Exactly.
Great. Once again, if you're on the line, you can dial *2 at any time. That will let me know that you have a question, and we'll attempt to bring you in when we have the opportunity. What are some other tough time strategies for speakers, Bert?
Well, here's something which is debatable, but it has worked for some speakers, to offer an all-inclusive delivered fee, including your travel, your incidentals, your meals, your sleeping room, everything. A flat fee, make sure you come out on this, you don't want to lose money, which includes everything. You will show up, do the program, and there'll be no other charges at all. And then, of course, it may pay you to lower your fee. Many of my clients, Brian, have learned that in these difficult times, cutting their fee by as much as 50% then makes them the irresistible expert because they're able to give more for less money. And when it's a matter of putting food on the table, feeding your kids, paying the mortgage, paying the car payment, paying the insurance payment, sometimes half a loaf is better than none. So when times are tough, that can be a perfectly valid action to take, and I do agree with that.
It's even a good strategy when times are not so tough. It's something that not a lot of speakers do, so it is something you can do to make it easier for the meeting planner, differentiate yourself a little bit. And I think that it helps you to come across as a professional when you know what you're doing. You've got it down. You know, you've got the system figured out so that you know exactly how much you need to charge, and it helps a meeting planner to budget their expenses too.
I totally agree. Now, I've got more tough times strategies. One of them is to, if you have past clients, if you aren't brand new in the business, call past clients and offer them sweetheart considerations. Last year's fees, for example, or whatever else might be considered something special just for them. And then, of course, go the extra mile, whatever you are doing. Give superior service. Lavish extra care, extra time on every gig. Customize your program manual covers. If you were to subscribe to my Speaking Biz Strategies letter, on the far left, you'll see all of my program manual covers for the actual programs I deliver for speakers. And you can enlarge them by clicking on more information, and you'll see each one of those program manual covers is customized for the purpose. One of the things I like to do on a program manual cover is include special typography, including the date and the venue of that performance, including the logo of the client, sometimes even the logo of the venue, if it has a logo. Piling on the extras is always a good idea. It's when you go to a nice restaurant, have a lovely dinner, and the waiter comes over and says, "Dessert will be complimentary." Wow. Who's going to resist a complimentary dessert? Another idea or two is to interview more of the client's people while you customize the event and acknowledge those people by name. Ask them to stand up and take a bow, if indeed they're in the room. They love that. They love their heroes being mentioned. I also like to create custom visuals for just that program with the name of the client right there. And when I do that, after the program, I give a gift to the decision maker with the master copies of the visuals I created just for them. I can't use them again anyway, and it becomes a memento. Something else to do in tough times is respond fast. If there's a request, handle it the same day. Mail things the same day. Show how much you care in every client contact. And then my final thought here on this is to use the sailor's remedy when the wind dies down. People who know me know that I used to have a little sailboat, a Sabot, when I was a kid. And I learned how to do something called tacking, how to make use of the wind and the tide even when they're going the wrong way, I would sail my little boat. I would engage the winds and tides, and I'd sail my little boat across the back bay behind Ventnor, New Jersey. And then I'd sail back, regardless of which way the wind is going. So the sailor's remedy is to put up more sail, not less, excuse me, when the wind dies down, and to make the most use of whatever wind there may happen to be, to market more, not less. One of my inner circle members, John Gregory Vincent, told me a few days ago that he has booked solid for the rest of the month, meaning the month that he told me this. He doesn't even have time for our scheduled mentoring section. I asked him how, in these tough times, he was able to get all those gigs. He said, this is exactly what I said. I just do exactly what you showed me to do. Simple as that.
Bert, we have a caller from Atlanta, Georgia. Has a question for you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes, hi. Hi, this is Sharon calling from Atlanta.
Hi, Sharon.
Hello there. I had submitted my question. I'm not sure if you've gotten to it. It involves my niche. I specialize in spiritual or inspirational talks, and I was wondering, how meaningful is that in the armed forces area? Is that something that I might want to investigate?
That's a very good question. You have to be cautious in mentioning the word spiritual, because for some people, that is a turnoff. For some decision makers, that is a turnoff. The way I like to get around that and not use the word, though I intend to do, for example, a spiritual type program, is to talk about personal effectiveness and to talk about life balance. Those are two of my favorite phrases, because under the banner of personal effectiveness, or under the banner of living a balanced life, meaning the business life, the home life, the respect for your children, your spouse, and all of that, you can then bring up spiritual principles, and they go down easily. That's the spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down, one might say. That's my recommendation. I would be very cautious about using the word, because for some people, it's an absolute turnoff.
Bert, can you just talk a little bit about your feelings on direct mail versus using electronic only, internet and email?
I'm delighted you're asking me that question, Brian, because I have strong feelings. They're very much my own biased feelings. Some people will disagree, and some people will agree, but I will just tell you my take on that question. I do not personally believe in using any direct mail except to mail products that people have ordered, naturally, or to respond to letters. Obviously, you would write back. What I decided to do over 10 years ago, Brian, and what I do, I have all of my marketing materials on my website. If you go there, you'll find everything that I want prospective speakers, prospective inner circle members, as I call them, when I work with them. I have everything on my website. And whereas years ago, going back to the early 90s, I did a lot of direct mail, I found that it just didn't pay. I'm far better off when they want a video of me. I've got five or six audios and videos on my website now. When they want information from my clients, I have my clients, many of them, photographs, phone numbers, and words available on my website. I got my programs are all noted on my website. Have in mind, in my case, I no longer market to the association market or the corporate market or the school market. I market only to aspiring speakers. In fact, as I tell people, I work with people who want to be speakers and with speakers who want to be masters. Many of my clients have gone on to get their CSPs, many of them. So I have everything on my website. That's my choice.
All right, that kind of leads into the next topic, which is self-promotion strategies. One of the ways to promote yourself, one of the ways is to use a website and have a downloadable one sheet or some other similar format with your website. What kind of strategy do you use for making sure that you are promoting yourself to, especially to meeting planners, as effectively as possible.
Well, have in mind my market is no longer meeting planners. It's aspiring speakers, just so you know that.
Okay, but for the speakers who are listening and they want to know how to promote themselves, what would you tell them?
I recommend that they do intelligent outbound marketing, calling decision makers, and I've developed a program called the Triple Play, which goes into enormous detail on this. It's a program which enables you to talk to decision makers, identify them first, and then talk to them about their concerns, their interests, their problems, their struggles, their intentions for a meeting, and only talk about them and not at all about you. It is amazing how people who think of themselves as very busy and only having a moment to talk to you will then spend the next half hour talking to you when you're talking about them and the things that matter to them. For example, what impact they want this program to have on the audience members that come to their meeting. For example, another example, what actions they want the people who attend that meeting to take. And yet other questions I like to ask, and they're all in my Triple Play program, which you can read about on my website, by the way, under products. Things like, what challenges are going on in your industry right now? What challenges are going on within your market right now? And what challenges and problems are you facing in your company, among your people right now? Things like that. I have actually come up with 28 questions, all about the other person. And when you ask enough of these questions, they get to like you. They feel you are concerned about them. It's far easier to close books.
So a self-promotion strategy is to ask questions to the other people about them.
People love to talk about themselves.
Okay.
Simple as that. And further, the fact that you're talking about them and all of the challenges and problems and opportunities, unexplored opportunities they are facing, they always or nearly always have the time to talk to you, and they're grateful for the fact that you're willing to talk to them about these matters. It sounds like you're a person they could like.
That sounds like something from, Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Yes, exactly.
Those strategies are very effective. What else can speakers do to promote themselves?
Okay. The ideas that I have is, first of all, to add such extra value to the programs you deliver that they can't stop talking about you, that you just, to use the cliche, knock their socks off with your in-depth understanding of their concerns. I like to research each audience in depth, and the way I do that is to ask the decision maker who could hire me for the names of three people that I can talk to about that program and how to make it even better, and they'll readily give me the names of three people, usually executives. Now, when I talk to each of those three people, I ask them, each of them, for the names of three people. That's nine people, plus the three is 12. And then as I get to each person, I continue going into depth, asking them not just questions about their concerns, their interests, their needs, their desires for this program, but for more people to talk to. And this is what I do, and I get an understanding of the organization, of their challenges, their opportunities, their threats that I otherwise would never have had. And the whole idea is to make myself, when I'm doing that type of a program, absolutely unforgettable. Now, another self-promotion strategy is to take one's national programs regional near your home. Why? Higher airfares, more places to go through for screening to get on airplanes. You know, flying used to be fun. Now it's an ordeal.
Going to the airport used to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, right now it's a hassle. Have to take your shoes off, your belt off, your this. And then these new machines that practically take a picture of you without your garments. Women, I've heard there are women who simply won't fly anymore. Then still another way to promote yourself is to get a sponsor who markets to the clients you want to serve. And I have something I want to give the callers on this this call. I've developed a special report for getting a sponsor to serve your market. In this case, it's a hard copy report. I would need to receive a stamped self-addressed envelope. Just first-class postage is enough. With your address on it, I'll send you a copy of my special report, number 331, on getting a sponsor to serve your market. I'll give that to you free. Now, if you're outside of the United States, then send me a dollar, a U.S. dollar, just to cover the postage. It's still free. I'm happy to give that to any person on this call.
Would it be okay to talk a little bit about what you put in contracts? And I'm not talking about so much the legal aspects or what you're doing to protect yourself as a speaker. I'm talking about things that you put into a contract that might be considered to be promotional or self-promotional in nature.
Well, by the way, I'm going to answer you in several ways. I developed a contract back in the mid-1980s, and I don't call it a contract. I call it a program confirmation. Again, it's hard copy, and anyone who wants to send me that same stamped self-addressed envelope, request a copy of my contract or my program confirmation. I'll enclose a sample free. Now, what I put in my contracts is far more than I could begin to tell you on this phone call. It's rather devilishly clever because it protects them as well as it protects me. I put in a triple guarantee of their total satisfaction with the program. For example, if any person attending my program is not absolutely delighted, I'll give back a pro rata share based on how many people are in the audience to the promoter, or the decision maker. I won't take that as part of my second check. Another thing I do, if there is not a total agreement, that a consensus by the people in the audience that my program was indeed everything they wanted it to be, I offer to give back the second half of the fee that I never get. I've never had to do that. I've always been paid the second half of the fee. And to explain that, for the people who may not know, it is trade custom in the speaking business to collect half your fee in front at the time of the booking. That's to compensate you for taking that date off your calendar, for starting to do the program research, the planning, all of that, in order to give them value. There's never a problem with that. And if someone is unwilling, by the way, Brian, to pay half of the fee in front, they don't understand trade practices, and they may be choosing to take advantage of you. I'd be very careful about that. So I put in this triple guarantee. It's in my program. Program confirmation, which I'll be happy to send anyone who sends me a self-addressed stamped envelope. No problem.
And do you consider that to be a risky strategy for people that are just getting started?
No. It causes them to be courageous, and it causes them to have real confidence in their ability to deliver. And if they do not have real confidence in their ability to deliver, they better start doing local programs till they develop that real confidence. It's never cost me a dime, that offer, and I've been doing it since, I'd say the mid-1980s.
You also have another strategy. Oh, before I get to this question, I just want to let people know that you'll have one more opportunity to be brought into the call. If you have any questions, dial *2 on your telephone keypad, and I will bring you in before the end of the call if I am able to. You have an interesting strategy. I don't know if you still have it, but you had one at least with the address that you use. Can you talk about that?
Oh, I'm happy to do that. And not only will I talk about it, I'll tell you where interested callers can read about it. First, here's how to read about it. Go to my frequently asked questions, the FAQ section. You can find it on my website. And the very last question, I explain this in detail and in writing. Now I'll tell it to you colloquially on the spot right now. Years and years ago, there was an NSA member from Florida. His name was Rene Nam, G-N-A-M. His specialty was writing direct mail. He was also a speaker. However, when he spoke, it was about direct mail. And I asked him for his card and his address, and his address was one response road, followed by a 9-digit zip code. Isn't that clever? Enter his address, since he deals in getting response. He put a benefit. Then I got a letter, as I'm sure everyone on the call has sooner or later or will, from Publishers Clearinghouse. Their address was 9 Winners Circle, followed by a zip code, a 9-digit zip code. And I thought, oh my, that was easy. How could I put a benefit and a promise into my address? So, after all, in my business, people want speaking success. So I created a street called Speaking Success Road. It doesn't exist, but it's my address. It has been my address since 1989 here in Kingman, Arizona. I gave myself the number 1 Speaking Success Road. That's right. And then I followed with my zip code, the 9-digit zip code that leads callers, or leads inquiry people who write to me, to my post office box at the post office. It was that simple. And again, you can read about this as the final question in my frequently asked questions section available on my website. And I tell you the whole thing a little more formally than I did just now.
That is great. You just made up a street name.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And if that street, let me tell you this now. That street name, Brian, should have the implication of a benefit and a promise. That should be in titles, labels, everything. For example, my company, my operating entity, is called Personal Achievement Institute. It's not the Personal Failure Institute. It's the Personal Achievement Institute. Again, the implication of a benefit and a promise. I take my own medicine. I do that which I recommend. And by the way, I came into this business a long time ago, 1978, if you really want to go way back, doing local programs, with an absolute bulldog determination to make it. I went broke twice, and I just would not give up. I just kept sitting at the feet of many masters, learning and discovering what I needed to do to make it. And by the mid-1980s, I was enjoying a nice six-figure income, and it's never been down since then.
The last topic that we have on your list here is adding spontaneity to your events. What do you have to tell us about that?
Yes, let me give you some ideas. I don't know, you of course have heard of Nito Cobain, the patron saint of NSA.
If the callers have not heard of Nito Cobain, it's N-I-D-O, his last name is Q-U-E-B-I-N, is that right?
E-I-N.
B-I-N, Q-U-E-B-I-N. Look him up.
Okay. Now, how to add spontaneity. I believe he wrote these words, though I've never asked him. This is a little quatrain. Be who you is, because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. Think about that one. For those who are writing it down, be who you is, because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. In other words, be the authentic you. Be transparent when you address a group. Be psychologically unclothed. In fact, I believe this with all my heart, in not speaking from your mouth, rather in speaking from your heart, from your soul, from the marrow of your bones. It's just as simple as that. Now, the second way that I like to use to add spontaneity and aliveness to what I do is to be accountable for my state. That's lowercase s, S-T-A-T-E. I mean for your state of being, your essence, the aspect of you that audiences perceive intuitively before you ever open your mouth. When I conducted my first boot camp back in 1997, for speakers that was on the Carnival cruise ship Ecstasy, I created a theme for that boot camp, and this is that theme. It's not what you're saying, it's who you're being. It's not what you're saying, it's who you're being. Because that's what audiences receive from you, just through the spaces between your words. They see it in the way you stand. They see it in the way you have chosen to clothe yourself. They see it in the pauses between your words, all of that. Now, another idea for spontaneity and aliveness is to feel great about yourself when you go out there on the platform. I've learned to be sure that my extremities are impeccable. By extremities, I mean my hair, my shoes, and my fingernails. They want to see clean fingernails. Of course, if it's a large auditorium, they'll never see your fingernails. But the people up front will. I want to be squeaky clean, so to speak, perfectly polished shoes, all of that. As for clothing, now standards seem to be changing these days. I like to buy good clothes. I like to show up in fine clothing. Many people are showing up to do a talk wearing what appears to be their gardening clothes. I don't happen to approve of that personally. If it works for someone else, that's fine. But it's nothing I choose to do. Another point to add spontaneity and aliveness to what you do is to be so special that you create evangelists, people who are become your groupies. I did a program for the International Exhibitors Association in the New Orleans Convention Center. I had 100 people in that program, and I prepared that one with great effort. Really wanted to make it marvelous. And 25 or so of those people representing major corporations later asked me to get back to them to talk about doing work for their respective companies. These were evangelists. Now, current examples of speakers most of you will know about are Jeffrey Gitomer and Dale Irvin. Now, they're superb speakers. They're wonderful personalities and wonderful human beings. Now, one of their secrets to add spontaneity and aliveness to their every program is to combine entertainment with valuable content. Feel free to Google Jeffrey Gitomer, G-I-T-O-M-E-R, Dale Irvin, I-R-V-I-N, and get to their websites and see what they're doing and make the most of it, because those are wonderful role models for you. Yet another idea to create spontaneity and aliveness is to create a platform persona. Let me give you two examples. Larry Wingate. Larry Wingate, as you may know, calls himself the pit bull of personal development. He comes on like a bad biker, wearing everything in black. And yet a different platform persona is Ralph Archbold. Speakers in the business will know these people. And Ralph Archbold comes on as Benjamin Franklin. In fact, when he walks on the stage, he is Benjamin Franklin. So ask yourself, in creating a platform persona, what is my gift for the world, for the universe of lives I touch? What is so special about me? What is the quality of my spirit, of my essence, of my beingness that I can authentically package and display that will make me look special? Simple as that. Test. Yes.
All right, Bert. We are just about out of time. Before I let you go, do you have any closing words of advice for everybody? Words of wisdom?
Well, yes. Now, this will be off the top of my head. I have no notes to look at
course,
for this
of course.
One. I've been in this business 30 years plus. I love this business. This is an opportunity to change lives. This is an opportunity to endow people with hope. This is now an opportunity to allow people to believe in themselves more. This is the privilege of the platform. And if you have as your inner motivation when you're going out onto the platform that this program not only will be the best program you'll ever deliver, or that you ever have delivered, I should say, more than that, that people who leave this program are going to leave this program feeling better about themselves, feeling hope for the future, feeling that they do have a chance, and loaded with ideas and insights that they can use to make their world better, to be more effective in everything that they undertake. That will be your gift for your audience. And again, when you do that, you are likely to make yourself unforgettable, and that's all you can ask.
Well, thank you again for joining us, Bert. I'm going to close out, and for those of you that don't know, the music that we play in our theme at the beginning and the end of every call is actually music that was produced and provided by Bert Dubin. So enjoy it on the way out. Until next time, this is Brian Kaplowitz.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the Speaker Match radio series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. Speaker Match is the leading provider of tools and services for emerging professional speakers. You can find more information about Speaker Match at www.speakermatch.com. Our toll-free number, if you prefer to reach us by phone, is 1-866-372-8768. International callers can reach us at area code 512-372-8768. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you the best in your speaking career.